It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Go Buck.
It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Go Buck.
It's the BBC.
This is Mecha Dawn. You are listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Peace.
Never running from the mission. On the heat up in the kitchen. See the light, we got a vision. On the ladder, escalator. On a mission to be greater. To the top is where we going. We don't care about a hater.
Slow it down for a second. Actually, let's not, cause we might give him a chance to catch up. So
let's go to the top.
Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, the show that is still smiling more than a week after cooking up some good old homemade duck soup. Joe Dexter with you. We got a great guest. Ben Axelrod joins us. He's the lead Ohio State writer at Bleacher Report. You can find him at 95.5 The Game in Columbus, as well as on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. We're here to talk about Ohio State's championship run and look ahead to 2015. Ben, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Glad to have you, as the national championship is in the books, more than a week away now. But it seems, Ben, when you look at the program and as we look forward to the next season, the confetti is still falling everywhere. Urban Meyer is out there recruiting, doing what he has to do, and he's on a full-fledged tour, as you wrote.
Yeah. He's everywhere right now. You turn on Letterman on Friday night, Urban's there. He's been on just about every national radio program, pretty much from, you know, right before the national title game up until right now even. And then he's at the Cavs game on Tuesday night, which was on TNT. The Cavs give him a jersey. You know, the entire sports world always has an eye on the Cavs and LeBron James. So, Urban's everywhere. I think Cardale's announcement actually probably even helps matters, and that, in the fact that that just became the biggest sports story in pretty much the world at the end of last week. Everybody, you know, I haven't seen an announcement from a college kid really garner as many eyeballs, especially for such an unknown like Cardale Jones, like his did. I mean, it was on NFL Network, it was on ESPN, it was on Fox Sports 1. I mean, it was everywhere.
Of course, Cardale announcing that he's going to return to Ohio State. I think the big part of it, too, when you look at it, is it was made such a big deal. And one thing that you wrote was it's actually probably pretty good for college football.
Yeah, I mean, it's about education, and that's, you know, that's such a cliche and that's such an easy kind of throwaway line. But, you know, I don't necessarily think he made the right decision. I mean, I think he made the right decision in terms of, you know, he should do what he wants to do. He should do what's best. But for him, from his point of view, but just from a football standpoint, I don't necessarily think that this was the right move. I mean, there is a possibility that this blows up. You know, he could either lose the job to JT before the start of the season. He could struggle, and obviously Ohio State's going to have a very capable backup ready to take over for him right away, and at a program with national championship expectations, you know, that hook might come sooner than later. You know, when you talk about losing a game and costing yourself the season, I think that there is a real possibility that his draft stock never winds up as high as it is right now. But, you know, education matters to him apparently. And you know, you can say it all you want, but his actions have really shown it.
He's Bleacher Report's Ohio State lead writer. You can catch him on 95.5 The Game on Twitter, at Ben Axelrod. Ben, the thing that sticks out to me is it seems the scouts were saying, hey, at least Mel Kiper, from my experience, from what I know, was saying at the least a fourth-round pick. That's kind of hard to pass up on. What were some of the things you were hearing at where he could have possibly went in the draft?
Yeah, that sounded like the floor to me as well, and it sounded like at the very least he'd be a high third round pick, which would guarantee you at least $1 million in salary, which, you know, any of this money for a kid like Cardale is going to be life altering, but that number especially I think is kind of the benchmark. And then you just look at the quarterback class, and it's a pretty weak class. I think Mariota and Winston are really the only two locks to be first rounders, and then behind them you have guys with a lot of question marks like Brett Hundley and Bryce Petty, and you know, just with the momentum that Cardale had, and you know he was going to test off the charts at the combine, just in terms of arm strength and wild people at pro day. I think that there was a really realistic chance he would have been the third quarterback taken in the draft, and there were some scouts who I saw said that he had the highest ceiling of any of the quarterbacks who would have been in this year's draft. So I think it was realistic to think that he could have snuck into the first round. I mean, who would have thought it'd be realistic to talk about him beating Wisconsin, Alabama, and Oregon? You know, so I think that, yeah, the fourth round sounded like the floor, but it was probably more likely he nudged towards that ceiling.
When you look at what Cardale was able to do in those three games and where he's projected in the draft, and you look forward to spring where he'll be most likely the most healthy quarterback going into spring, do you think he has a leg up on the competition when it comes to being possibly that starter?
I do. Of the three quarterbacks who we talk about, him, JT Barrett, and Braxton Miller, he is the only one who's going to be healthy this spring, and he'll be taking the majority of the first round or the first team reps. And he said that Urban Meyer didn't guarantee him the starting job, and I don't think Urban Meyer did. I think that that's not something Urban Meyer would necessarily do, but I do think Urban probably pointed out to him that, hey, you have the most working in your favor here of the three guys. There's a pretty good chance that, you know, come fall camp, you're going to have built a lead that might be insurmountable. So I do think Cardale came back with it in his mind that he will be the starter next year, and there are plenty of reasons to believe that. I mean, of the three, his resume is the smallest, but he has the three biggest wins of any of the guys in their college careers, and then you just talk about spring football, and you know, that's 15 practices. Those can be pretty important practices. I think that if Cardale plays to his ability, that he will be the starter you know, on September 7th against Virginia Tech.
Ben Axelrod with us. He's the Ohio State lead writer for Bleacher Report. You can find him on 95.5 The Game in Columbus as well, on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. You look at this position, the three-headed monster, and you tweeted something interesting not too long ago. Maybe we could see possibly Braxton Miller moving to another position. That seems more likely, you said, than seeing him transfer out of the program.
Yeah, and I've kind of been a guy who thought that a transfer was more likely than most did. We just look at it, he hasn't spoken to the media, he hasn't shot down any of the transfer rumors, and you know, maybe that's just a 22-year-old being a 22-year-old and enjoying seeing his name in the headlines every day. But you know, you think about his injury and how severe it is. I mean, it's the same injury that Drew Brees had actually, it's more severe than what Drew Brees had. And what Drew Brees went through, Dr. James Andrews said, was one of the most miraculous recoveries and comebacks he's ever seen. And Braxton's is a little more severe in the sense that he's had two surgeries on that shoulder now in an eight-month span. I know it was big news the other day when it came out that he was enrolled at Ohio State, but he had to do that to keep his options open. But one of those options is to switch positions and try to find a new spot and kind of find his niche in the offense as something other than a quarterback. And I'm still not sure whether that'd be a wide receiver or a running back or an H-back. And obviously Ohio State's loaded with talent, more proven than either of the other two quarterbacks right now at those positions. But there is an opportunity for more playing time at those spots when you rotate guys in. Braxton has shown he has the speed and the ability and the wiggle to kind of play one of those positions. I don't know if he can catch or not, but I'm starting to think that, you know, for a kid who's not going to be healthy until midway through fall camp, if he goes through a full recovery, I'm starting to think that a switch of positions might be the most realistic thing for Braxton.
How much of it would have to be just being committed to making the changes and understanding that, hey, you're not the playmaker, the super playmaker on this team anymore? Being a guy that started as, or got a lot of playing time as a freshman and really took over the program at one point.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. That might be the biggest thing is, you know, and especially switching from the quarterback position. I mean, these kids are so stubborn. You even look at a kid like Nick Marshall at Auburn, who it took him going down to the Senior Bowl this week to realize, hey, I'm not going to be able to play quarterback at the next level. I think we can be honest and say that it probably was never in the cards for Braxton to be an NFL starting quarterback or an NFL franchise quarterback, but these kids are all so committed to playing quarterback and they're all convinced that they're the guy. You grow up a quarterback, it's understandable to see why one would have that mindset. And then, you know, this year has been a big shot to Braxton Miller's ego, just in seeing somebody come in and do his job and arguably doing it better than he did it. It's tough to relinquish that role of quarterback, but with this injury and how severe it is to Braxton Miller's shoulder, I mean, there's major league pitchers who don't recover from this type of injury. It might be best for him to commit to playing something else and to look at what Denard Robinson is doing in Jacksonville and seeing that there are other ways to make money in football than playing quarterback.
He's the Ohio State lead writer at Bleacher Report, Ben Axelrod, with us on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Speaking of egos being damaged a little bit, you have to imagine JT Barrett's was just by the fact that he was able to lead this squad to where they were able to get and get into a Big Ten championship. He goes down against Michigan and not able to finish the job, has to watch the national championship be won by Cardale Jones on the sidelines. Where do you see him standing in the whole mix at quarterback at Ohio State? I think there's some that are kind of silencing the fact of what he was able to do this year and don't understand that maybe even if he doesn't win the starting job next year, he's still got a bright future at Ohio State.
Yeah, that's kind of where my mindset is with JT Barrett. I mean, I was so impressed with what he did this year in winning that game and East Lansing on the road. I mean, that was as impressive as, maybe not beating Alabama, but that's a top five win now. When you look at it on the road, prime time, a freshman starter going in there. I mean, JT Barrett still, even with missing the postseason and tacking on some stats at the end, still had statistically the best season of any quarterback in Ohio State history. Then you have a third guy come in there like Cardale Jones, and it starts to, you know, people start to say things like it's the system and that's how it is. And to a degree, you know, these numbers are going to be inflated in the system. Just even Ezekiel Elliott's numbers, you know, Carlos Hyde looked so impressive these past 2 years, and Zeke comes in and blows away Carlos's numbers. This is just going to be an offense that's going to put up a lot of numbers and then put up a lot of points. And, you know, probably in 8 to 10 years, when we look back at the record books, it's going to be a lot of guys who have played in the last 8 to 10 years, just because this offense is unlike any offense we've ever seen. But I don't think that should take away any credit from the players. I mean, the players still have to go out there and perform, and we've seen players struggle in this system as well. But as far as JT Barrett goes, my mindset with him is regardless of what happens this year, and there's a good chance he winds up being the starter this year at some point or prior to the start of the season. I think of the three quarterbacks, he is probably the best blend and probably, honestly has the most upside of any of the three when you look at his ability both as a passer and a runner. I do think that regardless of what happens this year, though, he is the starter in 2016. I think that he will have either jumped Cardale or Cardale will head to the NFL. And I don't think that Braxton, obviously Braxton doesn't have any eligibility left in 2016. So I think that moving forward, this is JT Barrett's program, at least in 2016. And that's kind of scary. He'll only be a junior that year. And we're all expecting another national title here in 2015, and then you're going to have 2 years of eligibility left for JT Barrett. That could be a very scary thing at Ohio State.
Ben Axelrod with us. He's the lead Ohio State writer for Bleacher Report. You can find him on 95.5 The Game. Man, if we're going to talk about 2015, and if we were to project how things were to happen like we have at the quarterback position, one thing is clear is that Ezekiel Elliott at that running back position is definitely a Heisman candidate. You would have to think maybe even the favorite.
Yeah, I wrote that after the title game that he's the favorite heading into 2015. I actually learned a lot about the Heisman process this year because I was really interested in JT Barrett's chances. And, just the numbers he was putting up, it seemed like he would probably be there. And had he stayed healthy, he would at least been in New York as a finalist, I would imagine, and might have finished a little higher than his fifth-place finish. But there's a guy who he works for the Heisman Trust now, and he used to run a site called HeismanPundit.com. And he had a list of kind of 10 commandments to follow for when projecting who's going to win the Heisman or looking at who's going to be in New York. And Zeke really meets all of them just in terms of, preseason hype. He plays a premier position at a premier program. The numbers are going to be there for him. He's a likable kid. He has a lot working in his favor when it comes to being a Heisman candidate in 2015, and it's not really a particularly strong field coming back. I saw Trevon Boykin and whoever's playing quarterback for Ohio State being mentioned as well already. And Leonard Fournette, obviously, down at LSU. But, I think heading into this season, Zeke's the front runner.
When you look at what he did this season, and one of the main themes of the football squad this year is how they improved from game one all the way to the championship, but have you ever seen a running back like that improve so much?
It was interesting because every time he played as a freshman last year, you saw that the talent was there and you saw that the ability was there and you saw that he was definitely more of a traditional spread running back than Carlos Hyde was. I think that a lot of stuff happened early in the year with how they used him and how teams were defending them. I think that teams, were placing an emphasis on Zeke really before he even proved anything and trying to make JT throw the ball. At least that's what happened at Virginia Tech. I mean, I think Zeke only had like 6 carries against Virginia Tech, and he had, I think, 3 games where he had less than 10 carries. I think the teams were just loading up the box on the Buckeyes and making Zeke prove or making JT prove himself, and that was kind of hindering Zeke. But as JT proved himself, and obviously here as Cardale unloaded the box for the Buckeyes, it really worked to Zeke's benefit, and he took full advantage of it.
How much of it is the fact that you mentioned he's a spread back, but one thing he can also do is pick up yards after contact? That was a huge part of those 3 games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most impressive part of his game, arguably. And that's, that's something that Carlos Hyde did very well also. You're right. He just and he's been doing it all with an injured wrist that he hurt in the preseason and that never fully healed. And he's going to have surgery on here soon if he hasn't already. He's one of the best yards after contact runners I've ever seen at Ohio State.
He's Ben Axelrod. You can find his work at Bleacher Report, the Ohio State lead writer for BR. You can also find him on 95.5 The Game in Columbus on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. How much does the coaching staff play into this championship? I don't think it's talked about enough, and it's being talked about a lot, but this was a team, as Urban Meyer said many, many a times, was not supposed to be here. It was supposed to be a growth year to get to this point.
Yeah, and I think that there were huge. We talk about the improvement of the quarterbacks and of Zeke. You know, I think that a guy like Zach Smith, the wide receivers coach, has made leaps here. I mean, he's a young guy, really just in his third year of major coaching, and I thought that the wide receivers made a massive jump this year. The defense implementing Chris Ash's scheme, I think that that's obviously proven to be what's worked best for this team, and that defense was one of the top in the country at the tail end of the season, and the way that Ash meshed with Luke Fickell, and I think that we can now see that that was one of the bigger problems on this team in the past 2 years was Withers and Fickell's schemes just didn't mesh as well as Ash and Fickell's. Tom Herman, there's a reason that, you know, Houston hired him, and I think that's going to be a home run hire, and I think here in probably 2 years we'll be looking at him like we look at a guy like Jim McElwain down at Florida who's ready to take a big-time position. And, you know, when it's all said and done, and this is getting way ahead of ourselves, he's the guy who I could see ultimately replacing Urban Meyer at Ohio State whenever that time comes. This is arguably the best coaching staff in the nation. I mean, that's not even mentioning Ed Warner, who I think Kansas really screwed up not hiring. You know, that offensive line was not a good offensive line the first few games of the season, and to see the growth that they made and playing, you know, a converted defensive lineman and Billy Price and an undersized center and Jacoby Bourne and, you know, kind of a career backup in Darryl Baldwin, that line made some massive, massive strides, and it's going to be a strength of this team now heading into to 2015. So this coaching staff, you can't say enough good things about them. And obviously that starts with Urban Meyer, who's back on top of the college football world now.
I'm with you on that one, Ben, because you, man, what Ed Warner's done the last two seasons rebuilding offensive lines. The question, though, now becomes, can he move into that co-offensive coordinator role up the way he has and become a type of play caller or a type of offensive influence that Tom Herman was?
I understand that, and he did call plays at Kansas when they won the Orange Bowl. And I know that Tom Herman was the quote unquote play caller here, and that's how this system works. But this is still Urban Meyer's offense. I mean, Urban Meyer is going to be the person with the heaviest influence over this offense, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. And I think that Warner has been in the system now for 3 years, and he's been in it long enough to know how this thing works and know how, Urban kind of operates. And I think that might be the most important thing because this still is Urban Meyer's baby. I mean, he's even said, you know, for him, defensive hires are more important because he is so heavily involved with the offense that, you know, that's where he lends his expertise. Warner, to a degree, is unproven as a play caller, but there are worse situations to be in than working in an offense with Urban Meyer.
Let's talk about Urban Meyer a little bit. Ben Axelrod with us, the lead Ohio State writer at Bleacher Report, 95.5 The Game in Columbus as well. When you look at Urban Meyer's history, and you wrote about this a little bit after the championship, and how things have changed in his life, how that affects things at Ohio State. People worried about him right after the championship in 2008, ran into a room, as you wrote, and started calling recruits right away, right after the game. He was right after it, after the championship with Ohio State, but this feels a little bit different to me.
Yeah, I mean, he was, I mean, I'm talking about like in the locker room, like during the locker room celebration, he was in the locker room calling recruits at Florida. I mean, that's what was going on there. He was not celebrating the title. He was calling recruits. This one, I think you've seen him enjoy it a little more. They didn't hit the recruiting road until the Wednesday or Thursday following the Monday night game. And he just seems to be more at peace. I think that the Urban we saw in Letterman wasn't an Urban that we would have seen 4 years ago or 5 years ago. He's been through some stuff, and he'll admit it. He doesn't like talking about it a whole lot. He'd like to just move past it. And I think winning that national title now, and obviously there's going to be redemption stories written and all that good stuff. But, to a lot of people, across the nation, certainly not in Columbus, but across the nation, Urban Meyer was that still that guy who quote unquote quit on Florida, that guy who Nick Saban quote unquote ran out of college coaching for a year, which I don't think is true, but that's the perception out there. Now that Urban's done it again, that he's won a national title at, you know, a Big Ten program, at a program that he's spent 3 years building up, I think that's his reputation again is one of the best coaches in America, and not necessarily the guy who everything went wrong for at the end at Florida.
One of the things that fans will always worry about is their head coach getting burned out, especially with the history of Urban Meyer, and that's been talk. It has been out there. Do you see that happening anytime in the future? I don't.
I don't, but you know, you do want to see how he handles this next year now, and that's kind of what I wrote about, in the sense that, you know, we've seen how he handles a loss now. We saw how he handled what happened against Michigan State last year, and we saw how he handled Virginia Tech this year. But we haven't seen how he handles a national title, and there's going to be a lot of pressure to repeat. It's this season. Fans should get ready for this, and the coaching staff, I'm sure, already is. This season, coming up in 2015, isn't going to be as fun as the one we just had. It's not as fun defending a title as much as it is chasing after one and winning one. I think we saw that in 2003 after the 0-2 team, was every win just feels like a release, and at some point, that bridge usually breaks. I don't see him getting burnt out. I think that he has made enough life-altering decisions and changes in his life where what happened at Florida isn't going to happen again. I do think that his coaching career probably is going to be shorter moving forward than most fans realize. Or, you know, he talked about the NFL, or he didn't talk about the NFL, but he was asked about the NFL, and he said not right now, and you start to wonder if maybe he's nearing all the accomplishments that he'd want to accomplish in the college game. So, you know, I don't think this is a situation where Urban Meyer is going to be around for the next 15 to 20 years as Ohio State's head coach. But I don't think he's going to get burned out. I don't think what happened at Florida is going to happen here.
Let's play hypothetical. Do you think he would be a good NFL coach?
I don't. You know, I think, well, I guess it would depend on your definition of good or successful. I don't think he could be the dominant coach that he is in college, just in terms of the NFL is set up for parity, and you know, you don't have that recruiting advantage that he would have. And then I think one of Urban's best traits is as a motivator. We saw that this year, and it's a lot easier to motivate 19 to 22 year olds who are just on scholarship than it is, you know, adults who are millionaires. Like in the NFL, I think that his personality would be kind of a strange fit in the NFL. But we've seen coaches make that leap before. We've seen Spurrier make that leap. We've seen Saban make that leap. He obviously had more of an NFL background than Urban. If Urban leaves for the NFL, and I don't necessarily think it will happen, although I did think it was interesting, he didn't say no to the question. He just said not right now. I don't think it would be really in the next 5 years or so. I think he wants to build something that will be remembered in Columbus. And if he does leave, it will be because he's out of challenges at the college game.
Do you think he's the best football coach in college football?
You know, right now it's tough for me to still bet against Saban. I know Urban just beat Saban, and I know that, you know, if they played again, I think Urban would win again, quite frankly. I think the Ohio State program right now is in better shape than the Alabama program, but Saban still has one more national title. Like Urban, he's done it at two different places. Even when Alabama hasn't won the national title like this year, last year they've been in contention for it towards the end. And I guess you could say the same about Urban ever since he came to Ohio State. But, you know, they're 1A and 1B. I mean, there's certainly a compelling case for either of them. But just, you know, I value national titles so much. It's hard for me to take one away from a guy like Nick Saban when he still has one more than Urban.
He's Ben Axelrod. You can find his work as the lead writer for Ohio State football at Bleacher Report, at 95.5 The Game, on Twitter, at Ben Axelrod. Ben, found out you're a big wrestling fan, so I got to ask, who's got the best wrestling persona on the Ohio State football team? I'm going to go with Cardale Jones. He's got the nickname. He's got the size and the build, man.
Yeah, 12 gauge is one of the best nicknames that I can recall in all of college football history, probably. I mean, and it just fits into a T, too. I mean, everything about it is perfect. Cardale certainly has the personality and like you mentioned, the size to be a wrestler. I throw Jeff Heirman into that conversation. He's been one of my favorite personalities to deal with in this program since I started covering the team, and he certainly has the size and the look for it as well. And Joey Bosa, you could see throwing up his finishing move and then throwing up the shrug. And then Taylor Decker has the look for it as well. He kind of has that Undertaker, Triple H type look. So, for a wrestling fan like myself, there's been no shortage of personalities for me to enjoy at Ohio State.
There's no doubting that Coach Coombs would be the best manager, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a given. I can't even think who would be a close second. I mean, he's got some Jimmy Hart in him. He's got some Bobby the Brain Heenan in him. Coach Coombs could jump right into the squared circle right now as a wrestler.
He's Ben Axelrod. You can find his work as the lead writer for Ohio State at BleacherReport.com as well as at 95.5 The Game. And make sure you follow him on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. Ben, thanks for your input and good to hear from you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
He's Ben Axelrod, the lead Ohio State writer for Bleacher Report. Check out his work at BleacherReport.com and on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. You got to follow Ben because he's hilarious plus he brings you great Ohio State insight. Of course, we've got some great insight on the way at our website. You can check it out at TheBuckeyeBattleCry.com where we get you ready for a great week of basketball. We'll get you ready for signing day coming up as well. Next week on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hours, we're joined with Jeremy Birmingham of 11warriors.com to break down the class of 2015 and what's still to come. We don't know all the insight quite of what's going to finish in the class of 2015 at the quarterback position and some other positions of question as well. We'll talk to Jeremy about the class, what to expect from the class, and what could happen leading up to signing day next Wednesday. I want to thank you for listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Of course, you can find us on iTunes and at our home hub, TheBuckeyeBattleCry.com. Go Buckeyes!
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.thebuckeyebattlecry.com.